I want to take 2 minutes to correct or refine some of our comments from yesterday. I think it's generally fair to say, as Cole reminded us yesterday before he took the day off today to swim in the high seas of theology, that the important part of our sugya, or the important principle that emerges from the Gemara's discussion, seems to be the idea that the loss will be allocated to the party who's frustrating the performance. If there's a clear party who's ma'akev, that party that gets stuck with the hefsid that flows from the onus. And what we saw yesterday is that there's an important machlokas rishonim about whether this principle is primarily operating on the second half of the journey, the part of the journey that was left incomplete, or whether this principle is operating on the first half of the journey, the part of the journey that was completed. Right? So that's machlokas between, we'll see on the one hand, Rashi, the Rif, and the Rambam. They all seem to say that in the cases where the socher has to pay, he's paying for the entire job. He's paying for the entire journey. Again, let's say you sailed from New York to Normandy. So you got to pay for and you drowned midway through the Atlantic. You got to pay for the entire journey. That in the case of a Svina Stam Yayinze, right? That's the view of the Rif, the Rambam, and Rashi. The Ritva cites Tosfos, and one of the Tosfosin in our Gemara, as Yoni pointed out last time, the different Tosfosin seem to say different things about this. But the Shita that we'll just call the Shita of Tosfos, which the Ritva cites B'Shem Tosfos, and we get from the Tosfabina Peretz as well, is that, of course, you'll never have to pay for the second half of the journey that was incomplete. The principle of Mima Akev, of Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh, is only operating on the part of the journey that actually was completed. And the Chiddush is that you can get a discount to not have to pay for the part of the journey that was even completed. Okay, does that ring familiar to everybody? Okay. Now, there are a few things that bear on this machlokas. Let's just say each view seems to contain an important chiddush. For Rashi, obviously, the chiddush seems to be what? What's the chiddush within the Rashi camp?
That you'd be paid for the part of the trip that you didn't even complete.
That's right. You know, the chiddush that you should be paid for the part of the journey that was not performed, not completed, right? Why should you have to pay that out? The chiddush, according to Tosfos B'Shem Rabbeinu Peretz, is that there are cases where you won't have to pay at all for even the performance that was completed. Now, even though they're both offering an interpretation of the same words of the Gemara, the Svina Stam Yayin Zeh, the idea that the party that's ma'akev gets stuck with the bill, it occurs to me now that they're actually interpreting the sugya very differently. Not just in application, you know, to the first half of the journey or to the second half of the journey, but let's just say the principle that's doing the substantive work in allocating the loss, I think, is very different for the Tosfos view than it is for the Rashi view. And that's what I want to flesh out now, which I think I didn't sufficiently appreciate yesterday. But two comments, I think one comment that Yair made yesterday and one comment that Dani made yesterday, I think really nail home this important difference. So let's flesh this out. You'll recall that the Ritva, let me just make sure I have this right. Yeah. Let's go back to the language of the Ritva and Bava Metzia'i and Tasamid Aleph. He cited this idea, this view of Tosos, that the whole discussion is about the first half of the journey. Does anybody recall what one of his main motivations for limiting the Sigya's discussion to the first half of the journey is? Anybody remember? What was one of the main motivations?
There's not been arguments.
Okay, you'll have to...
Wasn't one of the things that just was no good arguments for why they shouldn't get the money?
Well, not that there's just that there's no good arguments.
Arguments, and he said neither of them make sense.
Okay, but remember he cited the Sugya on Ayin Zayin of... right, so one of the things that motivates Tosfos limiting the sugya to the part that was performed is the his application of the sugya on Ayin Zayin that the motzi generally loses if there was if no party had a duty to foresee this. Right, or to specify. So the motzi here again is the Baal HaSfina. He's the one who has to justify his compensation. He should lose. There's no reason for him to be paid when you apply the rule of Bav Mitziyai and Zion. Okay? So that's one thing that tells. And you can see this is clear in the Ritva here. It's clear from how the other Rishonim apply this idea, specifically Tosa Bina Peretz. You see it also in here. I'll just read the Tosafot in Peretz formulation. V'od kasha, right? Another objection to Rashi's idea. Teha haynu one shelo hayelo labala yayin leidasha teva asfina dava one. So him came pseded the bala asfina. Teha aminon liel asa mitchup pseded the poalim. Lekach pirish ribar Mordechai demari hacha mechatzia derech shahalach. So you can see again explicitly in Tosa Bina Peretz that what motivates him to limit the Gemara's discussion to the first half of the journey is the application of the principle of Ayin Zayin. You can see this also, I think, in the Rush. Let me see if I was right. Here. He cites the Rashi view, but also the Riff and the Rambam view, and the Rush says in Parak Vav Siman Yud Aleph, V'lo Nehira, it's incorrect. What he said that you pay for the whole journey is incorrect. So again, you see this straightforward application. It's the application of the Sugya Ayin Zayin, which forces these Rishonim to say that there should be no payment for the part of the journey that was incomplete. And this ties into how they reconcile the Svina case with the Ayin Zayin case. Namely, how do they all reconcile the two sugyas? This was explicit in the Ritva. How do you reconcile the application of the different principles? Somebody shout out.
The superior knowledge rule refers, prospectively to the work not done.
Exactly. Ayin Zayin is about the work not done, which is why even in the Svina case, the Bala Svina should not be paid for the work that was incomplete. The real application of the Sugya and Daf Pei of the Svina is about the work that was completed. Okay. That's a little bit of the background. Now, the question I want to pose to you is, given that we've limited the sugya of the Svina to the work that was done, what's the general rule, according to Tosfos, for determining whether you pay for partial performance? For like the, we know the sugya of Chamor Shemeis Bechatzi Aderech. What's the general rule over there?
For Tosfos, you're saying?
Yeah, for Tosfos.
Hana.
Right, so we saw when we did the Chamor Socher Chamor Meis Bechatzi Aderech that whether you pay for half the journey, right, for getting to Rhode Island on your way to Boston, depends on whether you got some sort of hana. Rishonim said Mishtar Shile, different permutations of saying that you were Nene, at least in the Tosos camp. Not all Rishonim buy into this. the metric for deciding whether you pay for that partial trip is decided by whether you received hana from it. So, that being said, we basically have to figure out how does that principle of hana relate to the Gemara's discussion on Ayin Tess and Daf Pei, sorry, on Ayin Tess, about the Sfina case, right? So put it more precisely, in analyzing the Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh Mima Akev rule, how does Tosavos relate it to the Hana rule of Chamor Shemes Bechatzi Aderech? I think that's what Donnie was asking last Chabura and what Yair was giving an answer to. And I think this is actually much more, I think they're right that this is really the core of Tosis's view in our Sigya. So what do you think is going on there? How do those two principles interact? Yeah. I'm right here, guys. Don't worry. What's so funny, Donnie?
That you were worried, like, object permanence or something like that?
You know, you never know. There's crazy things going on. Maybe I just got mugged.
Also, I don't think you're recording. Like, oh, well, it doesn't matter if you're recording on here, right?
Yeah, I'm not recording on here. I'm recording it on my phone. Wait, so what's the answer, guys?
I think what the ritual would say in Tosfos is that really Hana is the essential factor, except in the case where a person is being mohal on the Hana by not trying to claim it. So there is Hana. You don't want the Hana, great, and now you're going to pay because I didn't provide you Hana. Or I'm in a position at least to do so.
Yes, that last phrase I think is exactly right. The significance of Sfina Stam and Yayin Zeh, namely that there's one party withholding performance, is really just a way, it's a mechanism for determining whether the Baal HaSfina is Mehane or is in a position to be Mehane, the Baal HaYayin, and to say that the Baal HaYayin is the one who's refusing the Hana. He's turning down the potential Hana. Notice the Ritva's formulation. This is all the Ritva B'das, the Tosos position. V'nihi de'miftar balabayis ala asid. That's because applying the Ayin Zayin rule. Mishum da'anis v'lo havle l'meida. Amai miftar lisha avar. Why should the balabayis be pater al-masha avar? Imishum de'lo ahanye. If the argument is that the Baal HaSfina didn't confer any hana, this is what Yair pointed out last time, right? The Baal HaSfina is saying, hey buddy, I'm right here to take you all the way to Normandy, right? I'm ready to get a replacement barge that's going to take you the rest of the way. You're the one who's refusing that service. You're refusing to take me up on it. So I think actually the way to understand the Ritva's Bidas Tosfos rule of Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh Mima Akev is really just about determining this Ka'im Le'ahanuye as a way of getting to the fact that really the Baal HaSfina is conferring a benefit by getting you this far. In which case, the Sugya on Ayin Tess is not really a separate Sugya from Chamor Shemes Bechatzi Aderech. What do you guys think of that?
I don't like it.
Because it's deflationary?
You're not getting Hana. If you could get Hana, because you could be Mekayim Hana, like what is that? Is there's still no Hana. There's no benefit brought at that point.
Okay, I agree that there's a move here from Lo Ahanye to Ka'im La Ahanuye. So it's certainly an expansion of the idea of Chamor Shemes Bechatzi Aderech, but I still think this is all just about virtually viewing this or artificially viewing this as if there could be Hana, which in Tosis's mind is sufficient. Let's see.
There's also, back to like the question of are you forward looking or backward looking, we're supposed to be backward looking right here. But the Kayim Hana implies a forward looking thing, versus if there was actually Hana, it's backward looking.
Well, the idea is that I was Mahane you by getting you this far, as evidenced by the fact that I could get you from here to even further. Right? I'm not just dropping you off in the middle of the Atlantic. I'm ready to get you to your destination where you need to go.
Not really. You still have to start all over again.
I don't know.
It's like you dropped him off in the middle of the Atlantic. It's a start again from point A.
Yeah, so I hear your objection to Tosis's theory. Let's focus just before we get too diverted into whether Tosis's theory whether it's defensible, just in whether this is the right interpretation of Tosis. That I'm right to say that what's really going on in Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh is a way of determining whether he's Kaila Hanuye. So I'll just take Yakir and then we'll take Donnie, because Yakir got his virtual hand up first.
This might be continuing the diversion. You don't want to continue, but maybe Adam will find this variant of what you just said more palatable. We talked about whether Hana and Tosfos was a Machayev in its own right, or whether it's just a simon for a partial performance. So maybe Kain La'anuye doesn't count as Hana, but it's another way of getting to partial performance. Meaning there are two ways you can determine you have partial performance. Either there was some Hana, so that's partial performance, or the job can still be completed. So it makes sense to consider it partially complete.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Yakir. I would just say that there's a nice, in Tosfos and Peretz, on the sugya of Chamor Shemes, he says, you know, the Gemara said, Ilu boy lemesi lav agra boy lemesav, right? Had you wanted to get midway, you would have to pay. Pirish v'yachol omar shehaneyu bekach, deshema af be'oso mokom shemesa chamor yachol limkor. It's like, it's not even that there is hana, but like there's the possibility or something. And maybe that's consistent with the point that Yakir is making here, right? It's koi la nuye. And so it's not a separate machayev hana. I think that's right. It's the right thing to say. It's a way of showing that there was like valid performance. Yeah, good point, Yakir. Donnie?
Yeah, I was gonna say similar to Yakir. I don't have the Tosos in front of me that we saw by the case of the Chamor, but I thought he said that it was about that it must be a place where you can get a Chamor and then finish the journey and then make the profit. And if that's the case, then that's potential. That's about the potential.
Yeah.
You don't even need to get that other chamor. It's not about really the hana, but the potential of hana.
Yeah, good. I think that's right. I think that's consistent with what Yakir is saying for sure. Mm-hmm. Adam, your follow up response.
Yeah, I guess I'm supposed to be. Still, I have, I think, a bit of a trouble with the word partial performance, in the sense that partial performance implies some type of mashmiyah to it. But like maybe like along those lines, like I'm thinking maybe something along lines of like proof of performance, the viability of performance. So if you have partial performance, that's proof of the viability of performance. Similarly, if you have truly the ability to do the performance, even if it hasn't been done, that's as well proof of the ability of performance.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I think you're right. That's a more precise way of putting it. Good. Notice again.
One way to test this would be just to look at the Chamor Zeh Chamor Stam issue, because in principle it should be the same question. If I say Chamor Zeh and the Chamor dies, then it should be the same din as the Sfina case.
Well, except that there's other. It depends, I guess, if there's like getting midway also allows you to get a different Chamor Zeh, right? So getting to Rhode Island is a kind of a benefit or service. Even if you hired like a specific chamor to get there, right? In virtue of the fact that other people are able to get you further. Let me just make one more diak in the Ritva's language Bidas Tosfos to buttress this view. The Ritva within the case of Sfina Zu Yayin Stam, okay? So that's the case where the Baal HaYayin gets off from payment entirely. And even if he paid, he gets to claw back and be reimbursed. And why is that? Why does he get discharged from paying or reimbursed for the first service? Because Ana Maisina Chamra V'chol Ha'onash Shelchahu. Okay? Which is the language, I think, that the other Rishonim use. Then he adds, V'lo ho'altani klum, right? You didn't benefit me at all. De'etein l'cha agra ad hacha. So I think it's very meduyak in the Ritva's language, Bidas Tosfos, that, you know, this is all about claims trying to establish whether there was benefit conferment for the first part of the journey. And so I think what emerges is that for this Tosfos camp, Sfina, Stam, Yayin, Zed, this whole discussion is a way of filling in the Hana question. Okay. Good? Anybody have comments on that? I don't think I fully appreciated this in the last Chabura, but then those comments by Yair and Dani, I think, hammered this home for me. Which is actually, it's a really big chiddush because it means that there's no really separate principle at work here, according to this Shita in the Ritva Bidas Tosfos. Okay. Now, that's diametrically opposed to... and again, I mentioned very briefly that there's that these other the Rush is a similar view, and we don't have to get into that now. That's diametrically opposed to the question, to the view of the Rambam and the Rif and Rashi, and even the Tosfos Nayin Tesemet Aleph, which actually falls into that camp. This is what confused Yoni. Tosfos here wants to explain why in a Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh case, you would pay for the entire journey, right? He says, Afilu lo nasan yesho lasteis kol haschirus. What's the rationale for that? So does anybody remember the two rationales that Tosfos gave or the two reasons? I remember?
I remember one.
What's here?
I mean, the idea of the kona the maschir.
Yeah, your kona the schiras, right? It's like a upfront sale of goods, and the owner of the asset is the one who gets stuck with the onsen. Very good, Adam. That's Tosfos's first, and he says first answer. I think my original reading was clearly wrong yesterday on the second point that I was making. Yeah, of course, he's just talking about the Baal HaSfina acquiring the payment. But the reason why he's entitled to keep the payment or demand payment if the boat drowned midway is because he was kone kol haschiros ex ante, right? So the thing that's doing the substantive work in our Gemara that explains why the substantive explanation of Sfina, Stam, and Yayin Zeh is really an application of the ownership rule, right? The owner always gets stuck with the hefsid. What then is the question of Mima Akev doing? On this view, what is the principle of which party is Ma'akev doing? Right, so for the Ritva camp, it's about determining Hana'a questions. What's it doing for this view in Tosfos?
Justifying how the contract still exists until it has been transferred.
Say it again, Yair?
Like a justification for the manner in which the contract still exists and has still been transferred.
Yeah, good. I'm going to put it slightly differently. I think you're right. The idea being that were one party to be like withholding performance, then that would be like some kind of external nezek, almost, to the mecher, right? So imagine it's like I sold you the house, but I'm refusing to hand you the keys, right? So yes, it's true that like the thing sold, but I have like some counterclaim against you for like failing to give me the keys that are necessary for me to get into the house. So the reason why in Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh, the Baal HaSfina gets paid is because there's an upfront transfer of the ticket of the owner or the ownership of the boat. the idea of Mizuma Namaskar Lakayim Tano, I think, is just to explain why there's no external reason to to undermine the Mecher rule, that the Ones follows the owner. Does that make sense to you guys? So, on this view in Tosfos, Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh is an application just of the ownership rule. Everybody agree? I think that's pretty straightforward. Yeah? Okay. Good. Yakir, I can't see your face. Do you agree, Yakir?
Sorry, I missed the last sentence and a half, but I agreed up till then.
Okay, good. So, I mean, this first view in Tosfos is just an application of the ownership rule, Yakir. And the idea of, you know, if one party's withholding performance, that would be, like, some external consideration, maybe why, like, ownership shouldn't be enough on its own. Then Tosfos has a second daya, and here I think this is the most important daya, I would say, for viewing this sugya as being its own. It's a sui generis principle, not an application of a principle from a different sugya, though maybe this is a principle we've seen in a few other sugyas, that even if it's not like a hakna or a kinyan, kivin shemasker yachal l'kayim t'no v'socher enu yachal l'kayim, im kein mazalo garam v'havik echozer bo. Now, and therefore yitin lo mechate derach shelo halach kipoel batel. So I actually think what's going on in this view is which doctrine? And maybe we have seen it in other sugyas, but I would say this maybe is the makar. What doctrine would this be? Ah, Gabe, I was going to say, you should say it, because you're the Mara Deshmaitza of the locus of the Ones question. Yes, exactly. It seems to be this is about the location of the Ones, and then notice he subtly connects location of the Ones, or source of the Ones, to two ideas, Mazalo Gorem and Havikichozerbo, right? This party is the one who's almost like considered to be breaching the agreement. And then this idea of Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh would be establishing an independent rule. Again, not necessarily one that we haven't seen yet. Mazalo Garam maybe is like the idea that we saw in the Angarya Sugya, though not necessarily as tightly connected with the idea of Kechozerbo. He's saying, look, the party that's withholding performance is considered to be the party that's breaching, and that's why... that's the reason for the party being stuck with the loss. Okay. So I think these are really three different ways of understanding the significance of Yayin Zeh and Sfina Stam. Tosos, the Ritva Tosos, the Ritva B'Shem Tosos is about Hana. The first day in Tosos is about the Mecher rule. And the second day in Tosos is about Gabe's rule about the locus of the Ones, Mazalo Garam V'Chozerbo. Excellent. Now, I pointed out, I do think there's an interesting diak here in Tosfos that a nafgamina between these two different possible interpretations, whether it's the Mecher rule or the Mazalo Garam V'Chozerbo rule, is whether you get a deduction for the Kipoel Batel amount. That seems to be true under the Mazalo Goreim Kechozerbo rule, not true under the Mechira rule. Okay. Comments on this? Adam, you have a hand? Adam?
Yeah, is it not possible that going back to Tosfos, that those two different approaches could result in exact opposite resolutions, depending on who the Ones is actually truly on?
Yeah, well, I think he's just assuming that the party that is unable to perform, that party is defined to be the Bala Ones.
It would sound like to me, in the case of the Sfina, there are many variations of that case where when the Sfina goes down, it is the fault of the owner of the Sfina.
Okay, good. That's a nice point. I think in all of these cases, there's an overriding principle and then like the specific way that the principle gets applied. And I think you're right to say that for that second view in Tosos, the real idea is locating the Oness. Maybe locating the Oness will sometimes be different from the party that's unable to perform. Is that your idea, Adam?
Yeah,
basically. Yeah. So good. We'll see some of that in a few minutes. Good. Just two important Aros. One is just remember how Tosos here Tosos Bidasari Van offers a different way of reconciling the superior knowledge, Motem Mechavero rule for Mayan Zion, with the idea of with the Sfina case rule. And that was based off the Rivan, that you apply the Ayin Zion. It's not about prospective versus retrospective, like the Brit Bidas Tosos had, but really it's about this chiluk between Bittel and Hefsid. If there's Hefsid, then we apply the Sfina rule, the Ayin Zeh Sfina Stam. If there's Mir Bittel, then we apply the Ayin Zion rule. And, you know, we saw Visser Zalman was upset by this, and I think Yair gave a really excellent answer last time to say that what's going on here is some economic consideration of loss distribution, that when someone's mafsid, we want to try to allow them to make up for their loss, but we're less concerned about helping somebody who's suffered mir bittel. Good. I want to make one other comment that follows from this question about what this, I think, depends on the 2 days in Tosos. About whether you get a deduction for Poel Batel on the part of the journey that wasn't performed. So what do you guys think of that? You're trying to get from, you're sailing from New York to Normandy, boat goes down midway, on the view of Rashi, the Rambam, and the Rif, that you're paying for the whole journey in Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh, are you paying the full amount for the full journey? Or does the Bala Sfina get some sort of, or does the passenger get a deduction for the fact that the owner of the Sfina or the Sfina itself didn't have to travel all the way? So is there a Poel is there a Menachelo ke Poel Batel argument here? So this is two deos in the Rishonim. You saw it seemed to be two deos in Tosos himself. But if you look at the tour in Siman Shini Aleph, he quotes the Rambam, really it comes from the Rif, Shetzarech lenachos lo hatorach shel chatzi aderech, she'eino doma mitabel b'holochas hasfina liyoshev batel. So even though the passenger is paying for the whole journey, he gets a discount, lucky for him, on the second half of the journey in consideration of the fact that the Bala Sfina didn't actually have to navigate through those really tricky waters. Does that sound right to you? Does that sound reasonable? Okay. The Rama disagrees. Aval Rama kasav de lo shayich lemeimar eno dome habatal in labarekan de bitela dehai de afsede lesfinte kasha leitve mehecha de avin melacha vidami leo chluse de mechuza de yoev lehu kol scharan. This is a really fascinating shita. He's saying, remember we have the principle of achlushe de mechuzah, that if they'd rather be working, then they get no benefit from their time off. So the Rama, in an interesting extension, argues that, hey, the Bala Sfina would much rather have his boat and take you to the other side of the Atlantic. All things considered, he's lost from this relationship. So he's like achlushe de mechuzah, and he should be paid for the full value of the journey, because he's not really getting any benefit once you factor in the fact that his boat has died. What do you guys think? So let me just put it a slightly different way. The way the Rama seems to be understanding Menachelo Kipoel Batel is that the worker gets a discount when he benefits. Here there's no real benefit once you consider that the poor guy's boat is at the bottom of the Atlantic. Okay, Adam, you have a hand.
Yeah, a few things. One, is this making the assumption that the person who's renting you out the boat is a person also guiding the boat, is also captain of the boat?
Yeah, very good. See, from the
if not, I don't understand why he would get Paul Baddell.
What's the Havamin even to give him Paul Bato?
Havamin and Paul Bato seems like he's unable to get work right now, but he was supposed to have to work for this period of time. Versus the reality of this is he wasn't supposed to be working at all.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's fair to say that these guys are assuming that the boat owner is with you or something, right? He's giving you passage. I think that's a fair assumption. Otherwise, unless they're thinking that it's like, you know, in cars, like every mile you put on is considered, it devalues the worth of the car. And so maybe there should be some consideration for the fact that instead of going the 5,000 miles, you only went 3,000 miles. Then the Rama is saying, that's ridiculous. The boat's at the bottom of the ocean, right? There's a car with 2,000 miles less at the bottom of the ocean is not really a benefit altogether. Right, in which case the Rama's position is pretty trivial, and the Rama's position would be strange, right? If that were the case. Mm-hmm. But if the Bala Svina is the captain of the boat, then the Rama's position is pretty strange, right? Yeah, he got some benefit, I suppose, from not having to go the rest of the journey. Why should the fact that his boat is at the middle of the ocean, at the bottom of the ocean, mitigate that benefit? Let me see. So Zolt has a hand. Zolt, what do you want to say?
Yeah, so the way I view it is I think there's I think there are two different ways looking at this sugya. Places like both Pir and Tosfo. Either you think there's like a shirut as this type of like rental happening here, in which case obviously you get paid for the full rental amount. Bundle in rentals, which is not a relevant concept. Or if it's not a rental and it's really just kind of like David Paul language, like the second version of Tosfo. So I think then the distinction, which is both seemingly the Rama and the Rambam, both seem to be operating on that assumption that it is a David Paul language, not like a rental. So I think at that point the question becomes, are you paying for the fulfillment of the potential contract that hasn't been done yet, as in the guy is willing to pay for the full to do another journey and you're just not willing to do it, so you're paying for that potential journey? Or are you paying for the last journey that already happened, you know, if it had gone to completion? So that if you're only paying for the future journey and actually get the wine to its proper destination, I think the argument is then that the guy's actually not working. He's not really doing half the work. So maybe you should about that. But if the argument is that we care from the beginning of the contract, we started working, so then I think the loss of the boat does count potentially as like as some type of loss. That
yeah.
Is what you're doing, obviously. You're,
yeah.
You lost your boat.
Sounds good. Yeah, so I think that's right. Anybody have thoughts on Yoni's point, or everyone agrees? Sounds like everyone's in agreement. For now. Gabe, we see a picture of you now. That's great. We lost Yakir's picture, but now we have a picture of you. Okay, good. So remember, could only see one of you at a time. Interesting. So just one final point. From last time we saw the Avin Azel. The Avin Azel did not like the Rivan's distinction between Hefzid versus Bittel, about which rule gets applied. He offered a different distinction, and he thought that it seems to depend on whether there's a kinyan beguf hadavar. If there's a kinyan beguf hadavar, so he thinks that in schiras poalim there generally is not a kinyan beguf hadavar. That's why the ayin zayin rule applies to poalim, and we say, you know, the superior knowledge motz mechavero rule. But in Tzchiras Metaltalin, where there's like a real kinyan beguf adavar, once you're moshech abehema, you're moshech asfina, you're kone, then the ownership rule goes into effect, which is the party who owns it is the one who gets stuck with the onus. That was Rabbi Zalman's answer. What I want to take a look at now is these two really interesting comments or short analyses by Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in one view, and the Machane Ephraim, who both weigh in on which rules get applied to which cases, and also you'll see some interesting specific interpretations of the individual rules. So Mikivagar here on Bava Mitzi and Tess weighs in on Tosvos. And he points out that Tosvos is motivated. This is the Ritva Bidas Tosvos view, that you're only paying for the first half. The discussion of the Gemara is limited to the first half of the journey. And you'll recall that the reason why Tosvos limited payment to the first half of the journey is because of the Sugya and Ayin Zayin. The Motzi Mechaveiro of Haraya rule gets applied to the part of the journey that wasn't completed. Okay? This is really interesting. Rabbi Kivagar is challenging Tosos' reading of the Sugya Nayan Zion. Why? Really interesting comment by Rabbi Kivagar. He says, Tosus assumes that there's a general rule that in principle would apply to the Sfina case. That being the rule of Kol Hecha Deshavin Motzmi Chaveral Varaya. Tosos seems to concede that it does apply to the Sfina case, and therefore limits the Sfina case to the Sfina Gemara to payment on past performance. But with respect to future performance, Tosos concedes that the Motzmi Chaveru Olav Araya rule would be controlling. Rabbi Kiva Eger thinks that's a misinterpretation of the Sugya on Ayin Zayin. He thinks it's wrong to think that the Ayin Zayin rule should ever apply to a Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh case. Why is that? So what do you mean?
The Powell, in the case of the rain, the Powell should have known it was going to rain, so you should have made it snack.
But remember, by construction, almost by hypothesis, that Gemara is a case where Shneim Shavin, right? Pshia Dechuvayu, right? Neither the Balabayas nor the Powell was expected to foresee the rain. Therefore, the Powell is the Motzi, and he loses.
He may
be common, yeah, but the parties are in Adam's equipoise.
Yeah, I think that what Rukhiger is getting at is a small step beyond the way we were understanding this, which is right, the assumption about making the Tanai means that reasonable people would predict that this might happen. Right? Like, you can't say, oh, Havalei Lahadnos, if it's unpredictable. So, Rabbi Kivagar is just taking that further to a case where no reasonable person would have in mind to make a Tanai about your book sinking, and so some other rule is invoked here. Like, the question is Mitzias, which, I don't know why you would think, but you wouldn't even consider that your boat might sink.
I think there's something a little more fundamental, Yair. A little more fundamental. Let's take a careful look at this again. Anybody else want to weigh in on the... Yakir, you're hiding behind a black screen. Did you get a chance to see Kivagar? So I think what he's saying, unless somebody wants to preempt me.
Are you taking it? I did not get a chance to see it.
Yeah, okay, fine. How many bottles does Uri have a day? I feel like he's... unless our Chaburo just coincides with his bottle time. But
No, he just eats all day.
He's huge. Got it.
Huge, and he eats like it.
So, I think what's going on in Ricky Vigor here is he's thinking that the Sfina rule is really about Gabe's principle, meaning. If there's an onus that's clearly in one party, then that party bears the loss, right? Aval beones gamar yishlomar dim ira ones bishel balabayis, and the poel is clearly not the fault. So poel matziyamar hakamina have upset the balabayis. What's going on in Bava Metzia Ayin Zayin is really about both parties being at equal fault. So when both parties are equally at fault, then we say superior knowledge or motzmei chaver olav araya. Because lo shayich lomar mazal chagaram. Right? You can't really point to the other party and say the locus of the onas is coming from you. Both parties are equally at fault. Dahav pshia d'tshuvayu. And when it's pshia d'tshuvayu, parties are in equipoise, and we apply the motzei mechaver olav araya rule, or the superior knowledge rule. But when there's a clear party from whom the onus is flowing from, that party gets saddled with the loss if there's an onus. Do you guys see his distinction? So it's not about, it's not like any of the distinctions we saw until now. So until now we saw three distinctions about how to distinguish between the sugyas. One is bittel versus hefsid. The second is prospective versus retrospective. And the third, Rabbi Isser Zalman, was about kinyan versus no kinyan. Rabbi Akiva Eiger is saying that superior, the motzei mechaver, the ayin zayin rule is about the parties actually being equal. There's no clear one party to pin the onus on. That's when Ayin Zayin goes into effect. Sfina Stam Yayin Ze goes into effect when there's a clear onus on one party and the other party is still able to perform. What do you guys think of that?
The way you phrased it, I actually think that what he's getting at is that the overriding principle is the principle of who could have better predicted, prevented, accommodated for this issue. And only in the absence of being able to do that can we invoke the recipient's onus. I guess that makes the onus the more basic principle, but not necessarily the overriding one. But
well, I think they're both onsen. The question is, does the onus...
according to Ricky Baker, it's a pshia. Not that the rainer was a pshia, but it was a pshia to not accommodate for reasonable onsen.
But it was an equal pshia, right?
It was an equal pshia, so you can't fault one of them for it, but it was a chaver olav araya.
Okay, and what happens in an equal onus?
In an equal onus, you focus on the locus of the onus.
Well, in an equal onus, there can't be a locus. It's equal.
No, meaning it was equally impossible for either of them to mitigate or predict it.
Ah, interesting. So you want to say there's a bit of an ambiguity here, right? So is the real distinction about pshia versus onus, right? Or is the real distinction about two different kinds of onus, an onus that doesn't inhere in either party versus an onus that inheres specifically in one? Yair is thinking the first, I'm thinking the second. Let's see, Yoni and then Adam.
Yeah, I think I agree with Yair. I think that I think Kiva Anger is pointing that there is seemingly responsibility of where the locus is, and the fact that the argument is that when they're both poshea, so then you can't say Mazal Chagaram, should otherwise imply that the locus
So you're saying partial.
That both are poshea, and that's why you have to rely on.
So you're saying, like, Poshea is a partial Pshia, or at least contributory Pshia, is a locus of the Onus claim killer.
Yeah, exactly. And it's only when neither party is Poshea and it does Onus Gamor, then you care about the locus of the Onus. And that's why, well, I can say, on the Kamina, the Palapai, like, your locus
of Pshia. Okay, I'm comfortable with that. So what we get then is a rule that if there is a clear onus from one party, that party bears the loss. The Ayin Zayin rule is really about both parties there being some contributory pshia, which blocks the locus of the onus rule. It's a gate blocker. Okay, good. Good, Yoni. Adam.
And there also seems to be another factor, even when you have a locus, in terms of if the Baal Bias is responsible for the Ones, he's only really responsible if the Pala is still able to continue.
Right, meaning it's right.
Like, Bashia is really, like, the, I think the reason that the word Bashia is being used is to sort of put Ones and, you know, fault of not being able to continue on the same level.
Interesting. Yeah, I see these. You're saying there's like two really aspects here. Ones b'shel ba'al habayis u'po'el matziyamar ha'kamina.
Exactly. So if those are equal both sides, if the ba'al habayis had ones and the po'el cannot continue, then it's considered b'shia, double b'shia on both sides.
Interesting. That's an interesting suggestion. It's a good hara. We have to see if he says more that would weigh in on that. But I definitely like the hara. Look at Ricky Vager, he goes on here, and furthering his theory, so he's really in Gabe's camp. Gabe, I mean, it's good that you have an ally here in Ricky Vager. He actually gets upset at the Namuke Yosef for thinking that the case of Chala Ha'eved Oshe Meis Lo Meis, De'in Meshalman Lo Kol Scharan. Remember we saw this case where the Eved has a relative who dies, or he gets sick, and the Namuke Yosef said that's a raya, that kol hecha de truvayu shavin, the poel loses. Right? That's why the poel loses when he has to stay home for his sick time. Now, Rikki Vager says, that's not a good raya at all. V'tamu ali ma'od, d'shayni hasam, she'ira ones b'shel poel, u'balabayis amar haka amina. Right? That's not an the case of the relative of the Eved who dies is not an application of the motzmei chaver olav araya rule, b'dishneim shavin. It's just an application of the Svina Stam Yayin Zeh case, where the locus of the Ones is in one party rather than the other. Gabe, right?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah?
Trying to understand the waterfall, or when we apply which principle, but yeah, here's the point. You could also talk about the personal holy as a Pshia, right? He should have been able to preempt or predict the likelihood of getting sick. I guess what I'm unsure about is where we draw the line. When do we apply which principle, or do they kind of flow seamlessly one into the other?
Right, well, I'm just pointing out that you see Ricky Vager here thinks that whenever the ones is bishel one party, right? Earlier he spoke about im iraha ones bishel balabayas, right? Did the ones fall on the balabayas' side? And here he's talking about Sheira Ones Bishel Poel. He thinks that's going to be controlling. And the Ayin Zayin rule gets applied like in different kinds of cases. Okay? He gives another example, interestingly, of...
Sorry, just to jump in. So that's what he's only applying when he's talking about Ones Gamor.
What's that?
Some kind of unpredictable Ones. So there's a pretty fine line between a regular Ones, at least previous line where you have both of the onus gummery, there's something about the nature of the onus which leads us to apply a different principle.
Well, that's what we were saying before, the distinction between chuvayu bipshia and onus gummer. That's what Yair was saying. I think that's what onus gummer is doing.
Yeah, Yes, sir. What I'm trying to ask is, are these different principles, or are they the same principles? The principle of Havli Eloi, do you like an indicator of whose mazal is Goriam? Like, could you read them as a seamless? No.
I don't think so. I think his point is that Havale lo duye is that there's some sort of pshia involved. And once there's pshia, these rules get, the rules of motzei mechavero, whatever, go into effect. Okay, the interesting thing is that he says, in the Oger Ogiri Ledavla case, Upasak Nahara, here, so now Ricky Vigor gets a little deeper. Maybe this helps. This is related to what Gabe's asking, into how we define the locus of the onus. So he actually says that in a case where you hire workers to water the field and then the river dries up, he says gam kein ein ha onus bishel balabayis rak poel she ein o yochol limtso mayim lahashkos. He's thinking that if I hire you to water my field and then the river dries up, that's considered to be an ones of the poel, not the ones of the balabayas. Why does he think that? It's a little strange, but he's thinking it's because the poel is enu yachol limtsomayim lahashkos. Aval heichash ira ones bishel balabayas v'hu ones delo shayich delo have pshia. Or something like it's clear that it's not pshia. Yeshlomar de mazala de balabayis garam. So I think Rabbi Kivager here is just a very clear proponent of the idea that the locus of the onus has priority over the superior knowledge rule. Okay. Then he adds in another point, which he thinks is, and he says it's a pella that the earlier Rishonim don't appreciate this distinction. And then he offers another point. He says, "V'allah od b'daiti lidchos kushes hatofos tosos hachazaka." Remember, Tosos restricted the sugya and Ayin Zayin to the first half of the journey because of the question. Sorry, they restricted the sugya and Daf Ayin Tes, the Sfina case, to the first half of the journey because of their reading of the sugya p'seded the poalim. And he says, "Arminan mazalai hu garam." So what do you think he's saying in this line over here? This is like another interesting theory about how to define the locus of the ones. So he's thinking that there's a way of saying that the sugya and Ayin Zayin is not about superior knowledge, it's about the locus of the ones being in the poalim, whereas the sugya on Daf Ayin Tes is not like that. So what do you think he's saying here? Yoni, you wanna?
Yeah, so he seems to be making that argument that in the case of Ayin Zayin, it is said that the Poalim, like that their locus is in the Poalim, not like the first nation was that the locus really was nowhere, maybe. But here, like the spirit's locus is specifically with the Poalim, because they're the ones losing out by not being able to work. While Baal Bayit, the loss, doesn't have a loss, since he could just water his field tomorrow.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So he's thinking that you could distinguish again in a different way between the sugyas based off where the locus of the ones is. And he actually at this point wants to suggest that in the watering case in Ayin Zayin, maybe the locus of the ones is in the poalim because they're not able to do their job. Whereas like the Baal Bayis is not really affected because like he'll just water his field tomorrow. So this is a different distinction from what he suggests earlier, but it's still just trying to distinguish between the sugyas on the basis of the locus of the ones. He actually recognizes that it's not so persuasive, but you see he's sticking to his gun that the Gabe theory of locus of the ones should be decisive. Gabe, you have a hand up that you wanted to mention something?
Yeah, first of all, I don't know if I deserve credit for the name of this theory, but I'll add it seems like he's taking the notion of Mazal more literally than we have so far, that if it works in the Baobai's benefit, or it's not just a question of locating the unpredictable outcome, rather it's a question of whether this works to the benefit or to the loss of the Baobai. Really, in the world of Mazal.
Yeah, good. You see, like, Mazal Ogaram here is about, like, who's affected by the onus, right? Not just by where it's flowing from, right, Gabe?
Yeah, whether it's good luck or bad luck, but it was the bracha or...
Yeah.
It feels, like, closer to theological.
Yeah, I don't know if this is closer to theological. I was just saying that it's the person who... And, like... The person with the bad luck is the person with the bad luck, right? Like, what it means to be the one with the bad luck is that, like, it affected you adversely. Yair, hand?
Yeah, I think on similar lines to Gabe, but I actually think that conflating this with the previous statement of Rabbi Hinegar is a little bit imprecise, and that I think what locus of onus means here is a little bit different. In the first statement of Rabbi Hinegar, it's who is
preventing performance.
From fulfillment of the contract. Whereas here, it's who is adversely affected by this event, or who is adversely affected to a greater degree.
Good, good.
So, like, the Hafsid Mamon is referred to there isn't even really the Hafsid that has to do with preventing the performance, because you have another vote.
Yeah, good. This is, I'm going to show you, I agree with you, Yair. Let me see, I can't see myself, but see, I have some of my notes. And you can see I have four different important principles. And I think I have Mi Ma'akev as distinct from Mazalayu Garam. See, the top one is Mazalayu Garam, and Mi Ma'akev is the last one. And I think, yeah, what you're pointing out here is that's Rabbi Kivager's distinguishing between those two, within these two deos. So you're saying dea number one is more about the Gabe sense of who, like, from which party is the onus flowing from. And the Ola Od B'dayti Lidchos, meaning Rabbi Kivager number two, is really about Mazalayhu Garam, which is different. It's a different principle. And it says that if there's one party who's clearly suffering the loss, that's his mazal. He gets stuck with it. Whereas if it's, like, equally distributed in some way, then... a different principle gets put into effect. Is that right, Yair?
Yeah, that's right.
Good. Okay, the Rabbi Kivager gives a third way of distinguishing.
I didn't follow. What's the difference between Mazalayu Garam and, I guess, the first principle? I didn't really follow what the difference is.
Go for it, Yair.
Sure. So within Rabbi Kivager, the first explanation or rejection of Tosfos is about where the onus adheres, who is preventing the performance of the contracts, and can therefore be salvaged with the losses that failure to perform is associated with. Whereas the second thing that Ethan was highlighting right now, very conveniently, focuses more on who's the loser in the onus happening. Meaning, when my vote sank, that lost me a lot more than it lost you. Clearly, I think in Gabe's sense, like, my mazel is what caused it, because I'm suffering so much, it's purely my spiritual fault, and so I deserve to be battled with these losses as well. Sort of an anti-economic argument.
Yeah, Yoni, I think...
I think it's just two different ways of explaining what Zlaigaram means, though.
Yeah.
Like, either way, he still refers to Zlaigaram. It's just two ways of determining what Zlaigaram refers to. Either refers to who has the bigger loss, or refers to who's the cause of loss.
Yeah, Yoni, that's how I initially put it, right? So my initial formulation was to say that these are just two different ways of locating the onus. One way of locating it is based off Mimakev. Another way of locating it is in terms of who's losing from it, right? So there's two different means to get at the same conceptual point of, you know, who's the onus targeting or who's it flowing from. But I think Yair is right that maybe it's more precise just in the language of Rabbi Kivager. The first thing is about Mi Ma'akev. The second thing is about Mazalayhu Garam, who's losing. And the reason why it's important to distinguish is because the first answer is saying that whenever there's one party who's preventing performance, that party always loses. He gets stuck with the loss. And we only apply the Motzi Mechaver Al Varaya rule when there's Pshia or there's no party that's Ma'akev. The second answer, Riki Veger, is saying that when there is a clear Mafsid, then we apply the Bav Metzia Ayin Zayin rule. When there's no clear Mafsid, then we defer to the Mi Ma'akev rule of Daf Ayin Tes, the Svina case. What do you guys think?
I mean, sure. I just think that kind of reduces. I think either way, it uses the language in both assessments, the language of Mezalai Garam, and I think it's just two different ways of approaching Mezalai Garam. And I think that's like it's kind of like a side topic that we haven't really explored. But whenever Rishon uses Mezalai Garam, I think they're using it in different ways.
Yeah.
People in different contexts. And I think it's just that two different ways of assessing its meanings.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good point. We'll see, actually, in the Machane Ephraim, we'll see that he has a very clear... I mean, he does a good job in teasing out these different ways of interpreting Mezalai Garam. Riki Veger then gives a third way of kind of dealing with the question that Tosas poses about how we decide when to apply one rule and when to apply the other. He says... and this, I think, is closer to the Rav Isser Zalman idea... that when it comes to Schiras Poalim, there's less of a kinyan. Mashenkein in Schiras Svina, bekinyan mamish. And I think this is just a way of getting at the ownership rule. This is just a way of getting at the ownership rule. The onus will follow the owner, and when there's a kinyan, like in Schiras Metatlin, then there's typically going to be an owner. Right, so Yeshlor b'kinyan mamish kuliyam amodim. V'imkein heich shemashach hasfina v'av mashicha v'kinyan gamor v'shemachia v'psida debal abayis. And I think that's very straightforward. I think that's along the lines of Rav Isser Zalman. Okay, so does everybody appreciate the three theories put forth by Riki Veger here about how to understand the relationship between Ayin Zayin and Daf Ayin Tes? So the first answer that he gives is that Ayin Zayin is about Pshia Dichuvayhu. That's why the Poel loses. Whereas Ayin Tes is about Ones Shel Balabayas. And that's why the Ones Shel Bal Hayayin, and therefore the Balasfina gets paid. The second answer is saying that Bav Metzia, the Poel, in Ayin Zayin, the Poel loses because the loss affects him exclusively, like a Mazalayu Garam. But when the loss is not affecting one party exclusively, then we'll apply the Ayin Tes rule that you look to who's Ma'akev. And his third answer is that it depends on whether there's a Kinyan or not. If there's a Kinyan, then you get Ayin Tes. If there's no Kinyan, you get Ayin Zayin. Okay, does everybody understand? Everybody, any questions on the three views in Riki Veger? Any comments, questions? Riki Veger? Very fascinating, Riki Veger, no? I mean, you can see he's really trying to map out these interrelationships. Okay, should we do the Machane Ephraim today, or should we push off Machane Ephraim to next week? What's the Olam thinking? Everyone looks a little burnt out. I'm getting knowing smiles. Who wants to do the Machane Ephraim now? Let's see. Not a single hand. You have somebody in the chat. I'll vote for next week. You didn't want to say it, Adam? Just say it. You don't have to...
I haven't seen it yet also, so I'd rather next week.
Is there a better lies now in terms of which sections we should.
Yeah. Inside? Yeah. The whole thing is Male Vagadosh. Literally, it's like he's got really interesting things to say at every turn. So let's read the Machane. Let's do this. Let's do the Machane Ephraim early next week. And then I want to talk a little bit about prepayment, the prepayment assumption of risk. Then a little bit of just to flesh out. Sfina Stam, Yayin Stam, Yayin Zeh, Sfina Zeh, kind of the distinction between them, flesh out a little more, and then Makas Medina. All right, does that sound good? All right. I'm thinking that if we there's a chance, what do you guys think? Do you think, first of all, I'm hoping that everyone will be back for next year, so I'm going to make a big push to re-recruit you guys for next year's Chabura. I'm wondering if it makes sense even just to not do Tzchiras Poalim, to do Chilas Poalim now and maybe push it off for Elul. And this way we don't feel like we're hurried and trying to nail down these very important Yesodos. So,
in terms of the guys next year, you jumping into the Poalim Sugyas might be disorienting.
Well, the nice thing is that Chilas Poalim is it's a bit of a standalone topic, and also Biyomo Titein Tzcharo is also a little standalone. So just kind of do Elozman on those two self-contained aspects and then get into like just the broader Shomrim Sugyas after Yontif. I think that's a nice idea, no? This way we don't have to, this way we could spend time
I'm happy. I'm happy to like do, you know, an Elul, like do different Sugyas. But like I'm wary of I guess come post-Hut game to still be doing like Spirit Colin.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm happy to do more Bob Mitzvah stuff, but I think what happens sometimes when you just, like, keep doing more of the same, you get, like, diminishing returns.
Right.
So I don't want to be doing Poalim for the most part of next year.
Right, right. Well, I think we wouldn't go, definitely for, you know, in the next 2.5 weeks or so that we have, we wouldn't go, like, we wouldn't do loss allocation Makas Medina stuff into next year. That would be really bad. You wouldn't do that. And then, you know, Achilas Poalim would be pretty self-contained, and so would Biyom HaTitein Tzcharo. And I could take a Shvuah D'Oraisa not to let those extend past the Moadim.
We've already learned that from Malamed, Shvuah D'Oraisa don't work so well.
Right, I'm not a Malamed, you know. All right, and then, you know, maybe it'll be, like, better incentive to make sure that everyone comes back for Elul, because, you know, how could you... We all were so excited to start Achilas Pol and Biyom HaTitein Tzcharo. Like, how could Gabe go off to learn Hilchos Shabbos or something? All right, fine. We'll talk about it.
Are you going to Shabbos for next year?
I'm down.
Okay, we'll talk.
It's a mutiny right here. Unbelievable. All right, Yasher Koach, everybody. So we'll pick up with the Machane Ephraim, and we'll probably spend next week wrapping up the basic loss allocation stuff, the Sfina, all the Sfina discussions. And then probably the week after, we'll do the Makas Medina stuff. All right? Good. Yasher Koach, everyone. Have a wonderful Shabbos.